Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This episode is not brought to you by anybody because we don't have any sponsors yet, but maybe someday your joyous listening experience will be disturbed by bad adverts. Sam, how's it going?
Yeah, it's all right. I was going to say, I suppose we could say it's being brought to you by two guys sat in a basement just having a chat.
Yeah, it's being brought to you by love. Not between us. But just in general, the feeling of love. This is the Simon Whistler Show with my good friend and co-host, co-pilot, number one. You a Star Trek fan?
I'm your goose.
Oh, dude, even better. Top Gun. No, not better than Star Trek, but solid.
I've never watched Star Trek.
That's okay. I didn't think you would.
No, I just never watched it.
No.
I quite like Star Wars before it got crap, but Star Trek, I just never was into it.
Never seen. I mean, I've seen one Star Wars, but I never got into it. No. Anyway. Well, let's not talk about that. That's a whole can of worms. Yeah. This is the show where we have fun with facts. We talk about a few different stories. I think we got five or six today, depending on how many we get to, if we don't run crazy long like we want to do. Before we get started, a bit of housekeeping. Leave us a review. People should leave us a review. Are you enjoying this show? Do you find it shit? Let us know either way. Preferably, if you find it shit... If you find it shit, either don't leave a review or lie. Lying is...
Tell your friends and ask their opinion.
Yeah. Pass it over to someone who has completely different tastes to you. Where should we start off today? I don't know why I'm asking you, because I came up with this first one. Dude, nutmeg is crazy. Are you familiar? Did you hear... Like, I knew about the cinnamon challenge, right? You know that one?
Yes, yeah, the one where everyone chokes.
Right, so I thought cinnamon... Let's just start with the cinnamon challenge.
All right,
we're going to talk about nutmeg. This one's about how nutmeg is really kind of a shit recreational drug. But let's just talk about the cinnamon challenge.
All right.
Because my experience with the cinnamon challenge, I've never done it, no desire to do it, is people would take a tablespoon of cinnamon and try to eat it. And it's so crazy dry, like I guess the surface area on it's super big, so it just dries out your mouth and you can't swallow it. And then I heard like people getting... ruined by this, like they were eating the cinnamon, it was getting all in their lungs, and like you're nodding, you were
no, I've seen it, it's terrifying. Like there's people are literally completely like
get close to your mic, Sam.
Oh, sorry, far.
I want to hear your lovely,
you want to hear
your lovely voice,
hear my bass, a baritone.
It's all about the bass, about the bass.
No. So basically, some people are absolutely like debilitated by this. Like,
well.
It's the real funny ones.
That's my problem. Because I was like, this was what I thought about Cinnamon Challenge. This is ruining people. And it turns out there was like two people sent to hospital because like, and one of them was in there because he had lung problems.
Oh, like, I don't care if it actually kills them. Like,
no, it doesn't though. It's just blown out of proportion by the media.
That's not the point. It's the amazing
videos. Don't
do
the Cinnamon Challenge, people. But I mean...
It's the amazing videos of people choking out their nose and their ears and everything.
It's pretty great.
It's fantastic. horrible.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about nutmeg. Bring it up. I don't want to... Don't make me look at links. Make me look at delish.com.
Delish.com.
Okay, so this is nutmeg, for those who aren't familiar.
Here we go.
Solid stock photo there, Delish.
That is nutmeg.
Oh, no. Oh, okay, I did pick up on this. It's actually... I've heard of ASAP Science. It's a YouTube channel. Anyway.
Oh,
yeah, a video by ASAP Science kind of gives it away. a video from ASAP Science, the Vimeo channel.
Wasn't ASAP Rocky? Isn't that a rapper?
Dude, I don't know. I'm not a music expert. What's that bloody pop-up
there's
doing?
There's a pop-up. There we go. Bug it off. All right.
I should really...
Oh, my God.
Dude, getting a job in the USA might be easier than you think.
Hang on. We're going to reload.
It's okay. It'll just come back.
Come back, but on the side. Here we go. But now we have to zoom in. Okay, can you read that? Do I have to zoom in?
Zoom in. You know how blind I am, man. Just zoom in a little. Yes. Okay, it's working.
All right.
So, nutmeg. It turns out that if you there was this channel, they were looking into all of these things, like ordinary things that could kill you. You know, people like, oh, you know,
seven bananas.
Seven bananas.
You're going to a potassium overdose.
No, it's not. 480 bloody bananas. It's right there in the article.
No, that's,
this is the legends that people keep perpetrating.
This is the myth.
You're the problem with the world, Sam.
Oh, thank you, mate. This is the problem. You have seven bananas and you go into potassium overdose and you die. That's what everyone tells you at school.
But it's a lie. You can overdose on this stuff, obviously. And I think people are like, oh, you know, everything in moderation. You can do crack as long as you don't smoke too much crack. And I'm like, yeah, but let's not, you know, let's not include crack in everything.
Let's not even
when we talk about
that,
everything in moderation. I assume it, I've not like, done crack.
It's like the amount of bananas you can do is far more than the amount of crack you can do before it causes any problems.
That's true.
70 cups of coffee, that's comforting, because I sometimes think that I drink too much coffee, but I'm glad that you can have 70 cups. I'd like to know if
hang
that's
on,
like...
Sam, but this is not like the recommended intake. This is not like you can go up to 70. It's like, no, you have 70 and you will die.
You will die, yeah.
Anyway, so nutmeg. It doesn't really kill you. I think one person died of a nutmeg overdose in total, so we can comfortably make fun of it. So basically, yeah, here it says, dating back as far as the 12th century, nutmeg has been used as in waves as a drug, snorted, smoked, eaten in large quantities to produce a hallucinogenic high. The results in side effects, this results in side effects, nausea, dizziness, as well as what feels like a two-day hangover. So I read this whole article and all about nutmeg and everything. And it just sounds like you've got a little bit of dissociation. You've got some mild, uncomfortable hallucinations. And I'm like, what's wrong with drugs? I'm like, why are we all into nutmeg when we could just
take ecstasy?
Yeah. And then it gets later into the article. It's like mostly experimented with teenagers. And I'm like,
that's what it will be. It will be that sort of like licking toad and things like that. It's that sort of like that high without having to go and buy drugs.
Do you know the Anarchist Cookbook?
No.
This was popular, I think, when I was a teenager, at least. So you're not that much different in age to me. It's this thing. It was like you could download it on the internet and it was like, oh, it's banned in 100 countries or whatever. And it kind of shows you how to make, you know, simple bombs.
Oh,
and,
wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, you know, things that would disrupt the state and all of this. And there was one in there called Bananadine, which is, it said, like, if you get bananas and you scrape the insides of the bananas and like dry them in the oven and then grind them up and take them, it's like a drug. And it turns out the guy just put it in there and it's just not true.
That's
so you've got
banana.
Like, but as a teenager I was like, let's make Bananadine. I never did. But I was like, you're like, yeah, let's do it.
That's a great
let's
way to get vitamin D.
Right, let's get high on nutmeg. Where I'm pretty sure like it wouldn't be too difficult to buy some weed as a 14-year-old. Like, friends of mine definitely did. I just wasn't cool enough to join them. So yeah, nutmeg just sounds like a really crap recreational drug.
I'd also be interested to know if, because nutmeg is often thrown into like alcoholic foods.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
like
mulled wine. Like there's
also, there's that American drink.
Chai latte.
No. Eggnog.
Eggnog.
That's made with nutmeg,
yeah,
right?
Definitely, for sure. Anything,
I reckon
anything
I'd love eggnog.
Oh, yeah. Eggnog's delicious.
Oh, you've
never
had
eggnog?
No.
Isn't it super
American?
Yeah, very American. I had it in America. But
it's a Christmas drink, right?
It's a Christmas drink.
I've never been Christmas in America.
However, it's one of those things that you drink and you go, oh, I'm going to feel that for the next month. It's like, it's
because it's so alcoholic, because it's so heavy.
Fatty. It's like, you're drinking like cream, basically. It's
sounds good.
It's great.
Okay, fuck it. I'm going to make some this year. Maybe we'll do a Christmas special.
We've got it here in the Czech Republic. We've got Vajecný liqueur, the egg liqueur.
That's eggnog?
Yeah,
it's
eggnog.
It's not the same thing, is it?
Pretty much. It's like rum.
But eggnog's like a, it's not super alcoholic because you're having a big glass, right?
It's not super alcoholic until you pour extra alcohol into it, which everyone
does.
That's
true.
So.
That's true. I've seen the movies.
Yep, that's it.
Like the punch.
Everyone tops it up.
The eggnog. You've got to pour it in. Get the little hip flask, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, that's it.
All right. You know, sorry, this is a wild ass tangent. I had never had pumpkin pie because it's a very American
thing. Very American, yeah.
And I was like, this sounds amazing. Like, I love pumpkins and I love pies. So I was talking about it with my wife and she's like, I'll make some pumpkin pie. I'm like, really? You're like the best wife ever. Go make some pumpkin pie. And she did. And it was delicious.
Oh my God, that's amazing, because I find pumpkin pie unbelievably disappointing.
Right, it's rich and tasty and it's got pumpkins.
Was it made from fresh pumpkin?
Yeah.
There you go. That's the difference.
What There's sort of pumpkin do you make it from?
Well, American pumpkin pie is made of like pie filling.
Then you're not really making it.
I'll tell you what it is. However, America
it's like,
does.
I made a pizza. You put a pizza in the oven. I cooked tonight.
Like I would say, American pies are second to none. However, they are like their structure of pie-ness is like on a level of one to pie. It's up there.
So they're like at a 3.13 on the pie.
Hey!
Almost there. That was a terrible joke.
Clever pun.
Weak.
But no, no, no. Pumpkin pie is very good. It's good if you drop in loads of marshmallows and bits and pieces and you've got the sweetness to sort of bring it up. That's kind of what they do over there.
Okay.
But I would love to taste your wife's pumpkin pie. That sounds delicious.
It's all gone, dude. I ate that. But
No!
I'll drop hints that I want another one. If I ask her directly, she'll probably be like, make it yourself. But if I'm like, I would be interested in another pumpkin pie, she'll be like, I'll make you another pumpkin pie.
Do you know
pie.
What will make our love stronger?
Yeah. This show could be brought to you by that, the love of pumpkin pie.
Love of pumpkin pie.
I'll bring some in. Let's move on from nutmeg.
Yeah. All right.
This is a completely different one.
Yeah.
How about this? Bring that up. This is from The Guardian. So it's got to be serious.
That's it.
And slightly, and by slightly, I mean very, left-wing. What's great about The Guardian is if you click on all of these things, eventually you will be able to view. They don't charge and they don't have a paywall. Like so many websites you go to, they're like, hey, you can watch. Oh, there was one I really wanted. Well, it's fair. It's journalism. Yeah. You should pay for it. Blah, 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 blah. But I found a great one for this podcast. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. And this article's super long and great. And then I didn't screenshot it. And I went back and they're like, you've reached your maximum articles.
No.
And I didn't want to open like an incognito window and fire up my VPN and all of this stuff. So I was just like,
all
screw
that effort.
It. Yeah.
All that effort.
Well, I was like, this was interesting to read anyway. But I can't even remember what it was now. But I was like, nah, because when we do it here, it'll be like, oh, you're from the same IP and it wouldn't load. And then we'd have nothing to look at or describe for our audio listeners. Okay, let's talk about this. The sad mystery of elastic bands found on a remote Cornish island solved. I'd never heard of this mystery. Did you hear of this mystery?
I didn't. I didn't know it needed solving. However, I'm glad they've solved it.
Me too. So let's not spoil for our dear listeners at home. Basically, there's this island in off the Cornish coast, which is the southwest of England. And you've been to Cornwall.
I have been to Cornwall many a time. Yeah. I like Cornwall. It's
Cornwall's
nice.
Nice. It's different down
there. It's
like
stepping back 20 years.
And everyone speaks like a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
But that's,
arr, they all talk like that. I got my character.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. The guy who played like the pirate in Treasure Island was from Cornwall, and he just used a thicker version of his Cornwall accent. And people were then like, that's how pirates speak.
Pirates talk like that now.
They definitely didn't.
They did not.
So this place is called Mullion Islands. And basically, all of these rubber bands started showing up on this island, which is fully uninhabited. And if you want to visit, you can't just roll up in your yacht or whatever, or your boat if you're poor. There's the difference between boat and yacht, right? Yachts are for... Is there actually a nautical difference? Just whenever you say yacht,
a yacht
you're like, oh, you're rich.
A yacht is large with sails. And
no, it doesn't have to have sail. It can be a motorboat.
No, that's not a yacht. It might be
bullshit.
It might be in America. It's like actual nautically.
Because you don't say a big-ass motorboat is a... Ooh, it's even called a motorboat. Maybe you're right.
It is. It's a motorboat.
But if I had a pimp-ass yacht, like...
Super yacht.
Massive, yeah.
Maybe super yacht, like
super
bypasses
yacht.
It.
Well, it's not sailing, is it? Although, I was in Venice.
You do set sail, however.
I was in Venice a couple of weeks ago.
Ooh.
And not a couple of weeks ago, Jesus, it was like a month ago. Ooh. Time flies, man. And there was a super yacht there. Genuine yacht. It was the biggest sailing boat in the world.
With a mast and everything.
Three enormous masts.
No.
This thing. Look up, just open it on here. You've got to take a look at this thing.
Uh-oh.
We'll get back to the rubber bands. It's not as interesting as this mega yacht. Just search biggest sailboat in the world.
Biggest sailboat.
Just biggest sailboat. Google that.
In the world.
Okay. The Black Pearl.
It was the Black Pearl.
Wait, is it the Black Pearl? It was this.
Let's have a butcher's. Have a butcher's hook.
Yeah.
Oh my.
That's
goodness,
dude. And I think it's motor assisted, perhaps.
No, they all are. They're all motor assisted.
No, they're not.
When there's no wind.
They're not. Oh, yeah, when there's no wind. But some of these absolute beasts, they can't do it just under sail power.
Oh, really?
I think this one is, but there's another one which is slightly smaller than it that can power itself by just the wind, which is perhaps that one we're looking at now. This one you just clicked on, that's the Black Pearl. The one I saw in Venice is the this one.
This one.
Which I don't think is called the Black Pearl. It's called some weird name like H1 or something. Something like
You'd think with such a beautiful yacht you'd come up with a good name.
It's not creative. It's some Russian billionaires. And this thing, this does not give you a good perspective of how absolutely huge that thing is. That looks like a small sailboat. Those masts are, 142 meters. That is...
That's mad.
A 25-meter boat would be, what, a 70-footer? So that's, in American, 480 plus 400-some feet.
400-some feet.
Absolutely massive. So anyway, you
that's
can't...
That's a big boat.
And it's a beautiful boat.
That's one...
One of a kind.
That's 1.5 times round a running track.
Yeah. Stretched out.
Yeah.
It's a beast.
Straight, without the bend.
It's an absolute beast.
Machine. Called Sailing Yacht A.
Sailing Yacht A.
What a waste of a name.
Pretty boring.
But that's amazing. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Load up that picture there. You wait, see,
which one?
Third down, third from the right.
This one.
That one.
That one.
No, right one. That one. This is great pod. Click on that. See, that's its size compared to a giant regular yacht.
Oh, my God. There we go. We're gonna
so that's a two-story regular yacht with what? Like a flybridge on top.
Holy shit.
Right?
That's amazing.
If they... I wish in the pictures they didn't have the flag at the back because it's clearly a giant flag. And you just assume it's a regular-sized flag so it looks small. But that's the size of that beast.
That's a beast.
Look, we've been way too long on giant sailing boats that I wish I owned. I don't know if I wish I owned it. Sorry for those listening in.
This isn't great for you, but this,
no,
like, I
boy.
Hope. Oh, God. Look this up at home.
Sailing Yacht A.
Sailing Yacht A.
If you're listening to this on audio right now, I know we don't normally do this and we do a pretty average job of describing what's going on. Just stop listening. Google image search Sailing Yacht A and maybe Sailing Yacht A next to regular sized boats. that's a Google search. Let's go back to the rubber bands islands, or we're never going
to
finish
back
this section.
Bands. Here we go. All right.
So. Dude, now this seems boring compared to Sailing Yacht A, which is an absolute yacht of absolute monster. Okay, so all of these, you can't go to this island, and there's tons of rubber bands and little pieces of plastic as well on this island. And so no one can work out what's going on. How do all of these rubber bands get on this island? Mm. They solve the mystery. Did you read this before, or do you want to take a guess?
I read it, but
did you have any guesses beforehand?
No, I thought either tidal or brought by animals. Like, they've got to be brought by birds. Like,
I assume some shit had washed up.
Yeah.
Like tidal, I guess, would be the same. You know, like a Royal Mail ship carrying bands somewhere. I don't know, it's England. Because, you know, there's so many of those red rubber bands
Royal
that are
Post,
everywhere.
You don't know where it's going to end up.
But no, because then they were like scattered all over the island. It wasn't just on the shore. And so then I was like, oh, I don't know. So I just read it because I didn't want to exercise my brain. Turns out, basically, birds were eating these because they thought they were worms on the mainland, coming over to this island, hanging out, and shitting out the rubber bands.
Well, at least they were able to ship them out. That's quite sad. I mean, did you ever see the pictures of the birds that died, and inside them there was all the elastic bands and things like that?
I've seen this. Don't bring it up.
No, I won't bring it up. It's sad.
It's unpleasant.
But no, I mean, that sort of thing happens all around the world. Like, there's so much plastic. It's mental. But like,
such a waste.
Yeah. No. It's interesting. It's sort of an interesting point how we're affecting the world, like, as humans, is that, well, like, we create these things, we leave them out, and then these birds are seeing this as food, they're eating the food, and it's not good for them, it's not good for the environment, and it's just being recycled round and round and round.
Yeah.
And where a biological, like, organism would break down, this one just doesn't. So they shit it out, it rains down a bit, the shit disperses, and then another bird eats it.
And then I guess this is more with plastics rather than rubber, but these microparticulates of plastic have become this major health concern
because everywhere.
And they're getting into, like, the food supply. I was reading this. Did you send me that article? Let's not tread on toes, because I think we've got that coming up next week, about plastics in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
we'll get into that later, but how it's getting into the fish and stuff, and then now we're eating it, so there's like tiny bits of plastic everywhere.
Oh, in us, yeah, inside of us. That's it. There's plastics. We've got microplastics inside of us, in our drinking water, everywhere. We can't get rid of it. It's everywhere now.
Good
but,
times.
No, but yeah, no, so it's interesting. Like, for those that aren't that aren't watching and are listening in, it's basically sort of just these little elastic bands everywhere.
Yeah,
just
tiny little everywhere. Things.
Tiny things. Look like little worms.
So I was like, what's, you know... I'm having dental work done right now, so I have these little elastic bands that go around the braces, you know, to align the jaw or whatever. And I was like, tiny elastic bands. These are the only tiny, the ones that do the brace work are the only tiny elastic bands I've come across in my life. All elastic bands have been like big enough to fit around your wrist, right? Normally.
Yeah.
Like normal elastic bands. Turns out they're used in growing flowers. Like they use them around the plants or something when they're growing. And then they're just not very good at disposing of them. You know, they'll just pick a plant and just leave the band on the ground. And so, yeah, they were coming from this this nearby place in Cornwall, I think it was, then flying out to this island. And yeah, so it was all from these flowers. However, stop doing that, flower people.
Yeah, flower
pick
people.
Up your rubbish. Come on, flower people.
That's it. We want to be able to buy our tulips without
the feeling. I hate flowers.
You hate flowers?
Yeah.
Why?
It's so wasteful. I love plants. I'm a huge plant fan.
I like plants.
But flowers... It's just
I've recently had to get rid of loads of plants because we've just got a kitten.
Yeah.
And loads of plants are poisonous to kittens.
Oh no.
Yeah, so things like the yucca. We have a beautiful yucca.
Oh, I love yucca.
Oh
yeah.
God, they're good. And we've had to get rid of it, and I've had to take loads of plants to work and things like that. So my desk is now like a little
good.
What do you call it? Like a nursery of beautiful plants.
That's cool.
However, now my house is completely naked, so it's a shame because if they eat them, he would get very poorly.
These plants we have in the studio are fake.
Oh,
because we're underground.
Yeah,
they're not going to do too well.
No light.
Yeah. So that's the rubber bands, and the mystery of the island solved.
That's it. From one island. To another island.
Oh yeah, what's next?
All right, so it's a bit of a myth that in the
oh, it is this week.
It's this week.
Hey,
we got it this week.
The plastic particulates.
Don't you worry. I made
awesome.
Sure.
Awesome. I
made
thought
sure
this was
to
next
link
week.
This in. Don't you worry. No, this is this week. So there's a bit of like a myth going around that there is an island of plastic.
By the way, sorry to interrupt, but. This is the most visual part. If you're listening to this and not watching this episode, I'd recommend watching this one because that's an epic photo of trash.
Of trash.
We're looking at a bird's eye view of collected trash on a beautiful azure background with in a...
I think what it actually is a Petri dish of small plastics.
Oh, wow. And it looks big.
It looks massive, doesn't it? No, it's. I think what it is a small Petri dish full of small...
Tiny little bits.
Like broken down plastics.
It's a beautiful picture.
It is beautiful. It's like if I was an abstract artist, I would take that and I would use that as inspiration. But basically, there's a massive collection of plastics in the sea called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Yeah.
And like people have heard of this, but people actually believe that it's like a massive island. Which like it's like sort of all grouped together and become an island. But actually, the main problem...
Must be a floating island, though.
A floating island of trash.
Because I wouldn't be like, well, it's not going to go down to the seafloor.
Well, it's actually not a floating island. It's just a massive collection of all the microplastics, which are basically broken down. And
micro is micro?
About so big. About
half a centimetre.
Yeah, maybe half the size of your little fingernail or something like that. Or smaller. But smaller than that.
Like, and like super grouped together?
Super grouped together. Like so
Can
basically
you see
all
it?
The tides. Well, this is the thing. You can't see it just like if you're sailing over it, you wouldn't know you're there. You'd notice that there's an abundance of plastics, but you wouldn't know it's there. It all sort of sits below the surface of the water. And if you were to go through with like a micro net thing and collect them all, which they've begun to do now, there was that clever Australian kid, I think he was,
yes,
who came up with the
some sort of system for system collecting it.
Sort of collected it like that.
That was a cool story.
It was a cool story. A great, great idea, actually. And if you were to go with that, you'd notice how much plastic is actually in there. They've now even begun to notice that there's much bigger plastics the further down you go. So things like fishing lines, fishing nets, fishing lines and fishing nets are a nightmare for this sort of thing. But because they're massive, massive collections of plastic, but they're all sort of hidden underwater.
I don't want to be a knob, but what's the problem?
With what?
With this. It's all in the middle of the ocean. Who cares? What?
That's divided the audience.
No. I mean, I know it's bad, but like, why is... I feel like there's trash on the land, just littering places, and people are dumping shit in forests.
In
like,
the land.
That affects me. Well, I think, does this affect... is this doing?
Okay, so what is this doing? So first of all, it's getting into all the fish. Like, so as you said, like, it's getting into the fish.
Ah, like the microplastics.
Microplastics are coming in. And so this, it's saying that there is a... Here we go, hang on, sorry. So it is a 4 to 16 times big... It's 4 to 16 times bigger than previously thought.
Oh my God.
Occupying an area roughly 4 times the size of California, comprising of an estimated 1.8 trillion pieces of rubbish. So tell me, Simon, what's the problem?
Well, no, I know it's all out there. And I'm being a bit funny for the sake of it, but it is in the middle of nowhere and people are
but I think this is that problem, that it's out of sight, so it's not a problem.
Yeah,
and that's something that I think the younger generation has a problem with, which is and some of the older generation, but I think it is like a movement of it's not out of sight, out of mind. It's something we have to sort of take and do something about. There you go. It says here, while the patch was once thought to be akin to a soup of nearly invisible microplastics, scientists now think that most of the trash contains larger pieces, and they say it's growing exponentially. Here's a really interesting little sort of there's 6 images, and it shows the different sorts of plastics that get collected.
It's beautiful images.
It is, isn't it? It's again, it's petri dishes, which have all been collected up, and so there's things like fishing lines. There's like, looks like
bottle caps,
bits of plastic torn aside,
bags. That one on the left looks like seaweed. Could spray it green and throw it back.
It's like, I used to dive quite a lot. When you dive, you notice a lot of things like fishing nets and fishing lines and stuff like that, and loads of fish and turtles and stuff like that
get caught on it.
So it's something that really does have to be...
I understand, and it is sad. Yeah. I just... my whole feeling with all of this is, let's just stop doing it in the first place. Whoever's dumping shit in the ocean, stop that shit. And like, let's just not use as much plastic.
Well, what's...
Because recycling's kind of just makes us feel better. We really need to stop using plastic. We really need to, like, don't wrap. I bought a pomelo.
Wrapped.
Dude, it's triple wrapped in stuff.
Do you know?
I buy it. It goes in a bag at the store. Then you take the pomelo out and it's wrapped in cling film, which is wrapped around another plastic protector of some kind. And it's like the pomelo skin is already this thick. The pomelo inside is tiny.
You don't eat the skin. Like, no. It doesn't matter. You can peel it off. It's like an orange. It's made its own. It's God's little gift that you unpeel.
And look, I don't want to shit on America too much, but they're much worse with the amount of plastic that they wrap stuff in.
Definitely, but the worst is Asia, 100%.
Like, oh, dude.
If you go to China, Japan, eat individually wrapped bananas and things like that. It's crazy.
It's absurd, but Asia's kind of...
It's its own...
I don't know. If we can manage it, I feel America can manage it. Asia's like, I don't know, they're wrapping all... Everything's wrapped. And I also feel, because they're further behind on the development curve, like, in the 50s, we spent... We were horrible.
Oh, awful.
We were
terrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
And I feel, you know, it takes a while to catch up.
Definitely.
And like, the whole polluting the environment and stuff, we give China a hard time.
But it's
we screwed up the environment for a really long time before we realized we should stop.
That's it. It's like,
and so what? Are we just saying like, yeah, we can do that. We can have the whole benefit of the Industrial Revolution and China can't?
Exactly.
I mean, hopefully no, but is that fair?
It's that whole, you're ripping down the rainforest, you're doing this, you're doing that. Well, you did it first, guys.
Yeah. You did it first.
You made your money doing this.
And then you realized it was bad and you want to tell us not to do it.
Exactly.
Shit.
But I mean, like, a big thing to note is that a lot of this plastic, they think, maybe not a lot, but like a chunk of it was from tropical storms, things like tsunamis in Japan and stuff like that. So there's, like, they found Game Boys, they found these boxes, they found hard hats.
Oh, like getting
stuff.
Swept out,
completely, totally taken away.
Shit.
Because whole massive cities were completely swept away. So they're saying, like, obviously it's not entirely just us being wasteful. It's things that were not supposed to end up in the sea that ended up there. It's just an interesting I think little aside. I think a lot of people don't know this exists, and it's not an island, it's scattered. It's just and here we go, this is really interesting. This is actually why I wanted to share this.
Just in my mind, like, because you were talking about what people think it was, in my mind, until I read this before we did today's show, it was like lots of like plastic bottles and bags, but grouped together on the surface. And if I was in my mega yacht coming along, it would be, you know, I'd be able to get through it, but it would be like scratching up the side of my mega yacht, which would be upsetting.
Yeah, scratching up sailing yacht A.
Yeah.
On my gap yacht.
Oh gosh, my beautiful yacht.
My yacht.
I mean my motorboat. It's not a yacht.
Not a yacht. It's a motorboat. So here, I wanted to share this diagram, which I know, again, not great audio.
Great pod today. Okay, what am I looking at?
So what are we looking at?
Let's do some descriptive audio.
There's a side-by-side comparison of two maps. One is from 1962.
Yeah.
And one is from 2018. Now, in 1962, it shows the scattering of microplastics and of plastics in the oceans.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically all blue.
Yeah.
And blue
the ocean
is
looks
good.
Like an ocean.
The ocean looks like an ocean. Like, there's a little scattering sort of in between the US and Asia, yeah, and a little bit in between Australia and Africa. But it's really
We've
not
only
very
ruined
much.
It a little.
It's salt and peppered. Let's say it's salt and peppered with plastic. Now, in 2018, it's fucking scorched. It's like the whole area has been burnt to a crisp. That's what it looks like. It's gone red.
There's a massive red gash
red
going from
gash,
the west coast of America to Japan.
And in between India,
oh, wow,
and
India
Southeast Asia.
And Southeast Asia.
I mean, here back in the 60s, it wasn't great, but now it's really bad. Like, it makes me feel sad. However, it's on and up. Have you seen those people selling those bracelets? They're good. They are. They go and clean all this crap up.
Oh yeah, Clean Ocean.
Clean Ocean. I think it's a really good story, and I hope that they're doing all the work that it seems like they're doing, because they seem to work very hard with this. But yeah,
I haven't looked into them at all. Whether it's just good marketing,
great marketing.
But sometimes when these things are a bit, because this is a very shiny campaign. Sometimes when the campaigns are a bit too shiny, I'm a little bit skeptical. But for no reason, I haven't done any looking into it. I love how on these graphs, it's like red is serious, but you know, like at the top of the scale, it goes purple. Like there was, you see just around India and then on the scale on the right, just zoom right in on that.
Hang on, let's zoom.
Is that actually purple or am I so blind?
It is purple.
It is purple.
God,
like,
I didn't
they're
that.
Like, red is not intense. Red is not bad. We've gone beyond red.
It's gone like
where
a,
you could
a
just
fat
adjust
man
the
screaming
scale.
At that kid.
Anyway, yeah, India, that is not a good time. That you probably couldn't swim through that. It'd be too, you couldn't get sailboat A in there.
You might be able to walk on it.
Yeah.
You walk over.
Soon. You want to visit India from Thailand? You don't need a flight with, what's that budget Asian airline? AirAsia. You don't need a flight with AirAsia. You just walk. Dude, let's cheer up. What's the next subject?
Oh, I hope it's a happy one. Here we go.
I don't know. It's probably not, is it?
Some.
No, it's not.
Some dick tattooed his cat.
That was my title. Oh. Did you see that? Did you look at the image?
I did see this.
I feel this is the most visual episode we've ever done. But okay, just imagine a Sphinx cat, which is the skinless cat. For the longest time, I thought a Manx cat was a skinless cat, but a Manx cat is a Sphinx cat is a cat without the hair. A Manx cat is a cat without the tail.
Oh,
from the Isle of Man.
Isle of Man.
Yeah,
you know I'm from the Isle of Man.
What?
No, my grandpa's from the Isle of Man.
My great aunt lives on the Isle of Man.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. We might.
Which
might
is amazing. There's like no one there.
No one lives on the Isle of Man. No, there's like one, two villages. But
wow.
No, really, Jamie. There's apparently a piece of land that belongs to our family over there. So
that's great.
Yeah, he's properly Manx, my grandpa.
Wow.
Scottish Manx.
That's he doesn't live there anymore.
No, I mean, I don't think he ever lived there. But his mum was from there, I think.
That's
or
cool.
His dad, one of the two.
Zoom in, Sam. You know I'm blind. Yeah, how would I describe this? It looks, because it's a Manx cat, and they have like the human...
It's a Sphinx cat.
Like Caucasian style skin, maybe a little bit, like a really, really pasty white dude skin.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of scary.
A man that's not seen the sun in many years.
Yeah, kind of like a man who records podcasts in his basement office.
He kind of looks like, you know, there's always that typical guy in every prison. In every prison film, like he's sort of he's got like multiple folds to the back of his head, and he shaves himself.
Yeah,
like, so he's like he's smooth as a dolphin. Kind of looks like that,
dude. Dolphins are so smooth,
so smooth.
Have you touched it?
I've never touched a dolphin.
So smooth,
but they're born furry.
No,
yeah,
really,
they're mammals. Yeah, they're born furry.
Wow,
and then they slowly become less furry and become.
Today
smooth.
I found out.
There you go.
Anyway, this guy basically he's a tattoo artist. He's in Russia. He's Russian. And he sedates his cat because it was too active when he was giving it the tattoo. And he tattooed gang tattoos on his cat. The article doesn't say whether the guy is in a gang, but I get the feeling that if he was, they would say. So they're kind of talking about how this guy just gives his cat gang tattoos, even though he's not in a gang. And apparently this is, we're looking at, it's a, I assume she's meant to be pretty, but it looks weird because it's
looks
tattooed
Marilyn
on the cat.
Marilyn Monroe-esque, but it's,
yeah, but yeah. If she was a bit weird looking.
Yeah. I love this. This is my favorite quote. So he called the cat demon. So he only has he has 10 tattoos on his own body.
Yeah.
So that he had to give demon an anesthetic so
that's
he
right.
could stand the pain of the ink needle, and admitted that it might not have been the right thing.
Yeah. So
poor cat.
Everyone was up in arms about this, and yeah.
Well, there's just... actually a picture of him doing it. Look at that.
Alexander, the owner of the tattoo. Oh, it's the same quote as before. I won't read that. But yeah, he's got his tatted up on his arms. He's wearing a shirt, a t-shirt, which has tattoo patterns on it. So he's really into tattoos.
He likes his tattoos. But yeah, I think this was a bit of a dick move from a bit of a dick man. And
he said, it's an old practice. That's why I'm neutral to it. Which, dude, you're a bad person.
I suppose murder's an old practice, isn't it?
Yeah, we've done it for centuries. Millennia, even.
Millennia. I don't know, how old is Cain and Abel? As a
the drug turns off the movement of the cat. What? But the brain is still working. If he does it frequently, it could affect his heart. Oh, this is some person talking about an expert talking about the anesthetics. Turn off the movement of the cat. Yeah. So no, it was extremely unpleasant for the cat, and now it has a tattoo, an ugly tattoo. I think the title I gave this, what do they title this article?
What did they title it?
Yeah.
Man slammed for drugging his Sphinx cat and covering it with gangster tattoos.
I think my title of dickhead tattoos cat is better.
Yeah.
It's more succinct.
I mean, it is a dick move. It's like, there's just, I think the problem is a cat can't say no.
Yeah, of course.
And that's the big, if the cat had gone, yeah, hit me. Get it. Yeah. Like, give it to me.
I'm then super into tattoos.
I like tattoos. I want my cats.
My cat boys are going to really think it's cool.
Give me tats, brah. Like, then fair enough. Well done. All right. But if the cat can't tell you he doesn't want it, if the cat doesn't tell you he does want it, then shouldn't be tattooing your cat.
Should we move on to something a bit more cheery?
This
is not cheery.
This isn't
at all.
Cheery.
It's the time. Okay. So the title doesn't really do it justice. Just don't go to the link just yet.
Okay.
Because I titled this, that time a plane crashed because kids were flying it. And you think, I saw this headline. This is, I think, the headline wherever I found this or whatever. And I was like, well, yeah, okay, it's sad. Some guy's flying his little Cessna or whatever, and he lets his kids take the control, and he crashes it, and the family die. And you're like, oh, well, that's sad, but, you know, fine. And then you look at it's a Wikipedia link. And then you look at the Wikipedia link, and it says, Aeroflot Flight 593. And I'm like, wait, I've heard of Aeroflot.
This and is flight... a big flight.
Yeah. So without spoiling it too much, how many people died? 63 passengers and 12 crew. So 75 people died.
Yeah.
Basically, the guy, he's... When was this?
1994.
So... Dude, I mean, after 9/11, when they start, you couldn't. When I was a kid, I remember
visit
you could
the pilots and
dude,
yeah,
right,
sit in the cockpit and everything.
Sit in the cockpit, see all the things. It was awesome. It's what some of my earliest memories are on, like long haul flights, getting to go and sit in the cockpit, or like not sit, but you know,
yeah, like
kind of
have
on.
A look around, look at the buttons and everything. Yeah, yeah.
Don't
press any of them.
No, and that's what went wrong.
That's all went wrong.
So the pilot, he's traveling with his kids. On a commercial flight, he's a commercial pilot, and he lets his kid sit in the chair and, like, you know, he's watching him and everything. But the kid accidentally flips off. Scroll down. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah,
oh wait, no, it's right
off the autopilot.
No, it wasn't was it?
Yeah, yeah. The pilot's son. So he had a 12 and 16 year old son, and the pilot's son had unknowingly disengaged the
autopilot control of the ailerons. So, yeah, and then basically they didn't notice. So the pilots take control, and the plane gets in a corkscrew dive, and they're trying to pull it out of it, and all of this, you know, trying to save the day or whatever, and stalls, and yeah, It crashes into a mountain range and everyone dies.
Everyone died. Yeah. It's...
Cheery stuff.
Moral of the story, don't let your kids fly a plane.
Yeah, don't do that. So I think, you know, when after 9/11, they've got those doors keeping terrorists out and children. Even your own children.
Even your own children. Keep them out. Did you know, side note, I think everyone knows this. However, I'm going to say it anyway. Did you know that pilots will never eat the same meal?
Yeah, they have, because in case they get food poisoning.
In case one
right?
of them's, yeah, in case one of them's bad. And so at least like the chances of you getting two or three bad meals is very low, as opposed to if they will eat the beef or the fish, then they're all going to get ill at once.
I'm not sure. I think they don't just eat different meals, but they eat meals from different classes of travel.
Do they?
Because they come from different kitchens, perhaps, or they come from, so it won't, like, there'll be less chance of cross-contamination. And so the pilot will eat like a first-class meal, and the co-pilot will eat like business or economy.
Business, so disappointed. Like, the economy, yeah. Fair enough, that is poor guy. But
The biggest thing I'd be happy about becoming a captain rather than the co-pilot would be like getting some higher quality food.
First-class meals, yeah. this is solid pod. I think aircraft food has got better. Or do not? It used to be really shit.
It depends which airline you fly. Because I feel airlines, you know, there's more push to budget. You know, you can fly cheaper, like Norwegian or British Airways these days is pretty weak. But then if you fly a more expensive airline, then the food's better. There's more variation, but at the bottom end is pretty bad.
Yeah, I hate how they microwave sausages. It's my least favorite.
They don't microwave anything.
Microwave absolutely anything.
No,
they don't.
There's no microwaves on planes. It's all super fast convection ovens.
No,
because they can't have microwaves on planes.
Really?
Because it like might interfere with the equipment and shit.
Bang.
Yeah, there you go.
Boom, but goes the dynamite. That's
don't
crazy.
Don't get me wrong. It still tastes bad. It's as if they microwaved it. No, I don't know. And listen, even like economy stuff. I'm sitting there, you know, on a long flight. I won't ever eat on a short haul. But I'm sitting there and I'm like, I enjoy it just for the entertainment, or like the breaking of the monotony
I
watched the fourth movie in a row that I don't want to watch. And it's like, oh, it's an event. And I'll slowly eat it.
Slowly eat it.
And then I'll like be like, oh, there it is. Oh, you know?
You know, I was always, I'm a bit embarrassed at this. I was always in the past that guy that would make friends with everyone that was sat around so that when they're not going to eat a part of their meal, I could eat it.
Oh, no, you're that guy.
I'm that guy.
Oh, don't be that guy. Oh,
but it was for exactly the same reason that if I'm taking a 12-hour flight, I don't want my meal to be over so quickly.
Just ask the cabin crew.
They won't give you more food. They'll give you more booze. Like that's one of those things that people don't realize when you take your first long haul flight. They will just feed you booze the whole time.
Yeah.
Little things of booze, little bottles of booze. Like, so things like Bailey's, Jameson's, all that, you can get all of that, and that is paid for. That's in the price. And also white wine, red wine, always after any meal you can ask for like a nightcap.
Yeah, time. It depends what...
After breakfast.
It depends what airline you go on. There's such huge variety in quality. And
like anything Middle Eastern, they're great.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Anything.
Dude, Middle Eastern airlines are a different game.
Absolutely.
Anyway, just jumping back to this Aeroflot 593. Apparently, they did an investigation afterwards. Oh, and of course, the Russians were like, no, it wasn't the children. It was some other problem. But apparently, if they'd just turned on the autopilot and let go of the controls, it would have managed to pull it out of the, which is crazy.
Well, because what it says is that they didn't realize that it had been turned off. Like they,
yeah, exactly.
They switched it off and they just had no idea. So they started. What was it? They started to fall and then they overcorrected. And because they overcorrected, they stalled and then it corkscrewed down and hit the mountains. And they're in the mountains, so there's a lot of mountain to hit.
Well, dude, there's always a lot of ground to hit wherever you are. You're not just going to fall forever.
True that. Did you know that they tested landing on autopilot and it was so accurate that they had to switch it off because it was leaving dents in the runway?
How would it leave dents in the runway?
Because every plane kept hitting exactly
the same spot.
And so
I feel like they land a lot of planes on autopilot these days, though.
I think they do.
Okay.
If we've got any pilots listening...
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know. We'd like to know that.
I feel like the more modern planes.
What's our email address again?
SWpodcast@gmail.com. Okay. So let's move on to something a bit more cheery. How are we doing for time?
45.
Oh, cool. Beautiful. Doing great today.
Very good.
Oh, yeah. We finally got onto something cheery.
This is great.
Jack Black's mum.
All right. This blew my mind. This absolutely good, right? Blew my mind. I had no idea about this. Like, this is...
Open it up.
Let's open it.
Judith Love Cohen. You know she's already notable because she has her own Wikipedia page.
And three names.
Also, hang on. So what's Jack Black's name?
Jack Black.
Just go on to the right. No. Because his mum's name... Oh, maybe... Well, no, she'd be Black.
No, it is Black. She was married three times.
Ah, okay. Because so Jack Black definitely sounds like a stage name.
Oh, Thomas Jacob Black.
Okay, well, I guess Jack is short for Jacob.
Strip off! That was a good movie. School of Rock.
Oh, dude. That's one of my favorite movies.
What's that like? This is Mr. Schneebly.
Dude. Miss Lemons thinks she can hear music from coming down the hall. Well, kids, I guess Miss Lemons must be smoking crack. Absolute gold.
Amazing. Perfect. Oh, God.
I think that's probably the only musical I've ever enjoyed. That was so good. Okay, Judith Love Cohen was an American aerospace engineer and author. She worked as an electrical engineer on the Minuteman missile, the science ground station for the Hubble Space Telescope, the tracking and data relay satellite, and to top it all off, the Apollo space program.
You know, I was half impressed with my own CV, and that's just put me to shame. That's awful. That's amazing. Like, incredible.
And this is Jack Black's mum. Do you think she died only a few years ago.
He's got a Nickelodeon award.
Do you think she's like, he's like, yeah, you know, I star, you know, I'm a huge Hollywood hit. I'm a famous rock star. I'm, you know, I'm a made man. She's like, you could do better, Jacob.
Thomas.
Wait, what? I didn't even read this before.
What?
Scroll left.
What?
After her retirement as an engineer, she founded a children's multimedia publishing company, eventually publishing more than 20 titles.
Yeah, and there's a list of those titles. So they were all sort of female empowerment books. So they were, you can be a woman astronomer, you can be a woman chemist, you can be a woman video game producer, things
like
that.
So this is so cool.
Yeah, like they were like sort of proud sort of feminist books saying, I was one of the only ones in my field. It says here she went through university, and doing her master's program, she was the only female engineering student in the whole class, which is mental. And, you know, I love these sorts of stories. It's like the...
Dude, after the depression-riddled episode today. Nice.
We're like a bit of positive news. Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
No. I was going to say, it's like the computers, the women that helped get the first people on the moon, the NASA computers. Yeah. There were four Black women. I cannot remember their names. They made a movie about them.
Hidden Figures. Yeah.
That was uplifting, that everyone, like, despite fighting against the regime,
yeah,
were able
Judith
to...
Judith Love Cohen, what are you doing? Like, you're working for the Apollo space program.
Well, but she would have worked with them.
Yeah, I know, but like, she's white. She's Jewish. Cohen.
Yeah.
She had a step up. But I'm definitely joking. She's incredible. The women from Hidden Figures were incredible. This is an incredible movie.
Yeah. And, well, do you know, so Jack Black wasn't the only known son. Like, she's got another famous son. She had four children. I'll just quickly give the rundown. So yeah. She had her first three, Neil, Howard, and Rachel, with Bernard Siegel, who she met in college. And then they got divorced. And then she later married Thomas William Black. Her fourth child, Jack, was born in 1969. There you go. So Jack and
So who's the other son?
Cohen and Black divorced. Jack.
No, well, you said there was another one who was also notable.
Yes, so the other one here is...
Wait, there were four?
There was four. So she's got Neil as well.
Yeah.
And
oh
he
my
was
God,
also...
that's a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Neil Gilbert Siegel is an American computer scientist, systems engineer, and engineer known for his development of many key systems for the United States military, including the Blue Force Tracking system, the U.S. Army's first unmanned air vehicle system, and the U.S. Army Forward Area Air Defense System. What a family.
That's impressive.
Like,
I like these. It makes sense, though. Because, you know, when you're always like, wow, all from the same family, it's like, yeah, because they're really smart and probably have that hardworking gene. And then also, you know, if the parents are successful, it's going to help the kids be successful, if the brother and all of this stuff. Who's, did you watch that, what the hell is it called? Based on the Margaret Atwood, Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale.
Did you watch that?
I've not seen it. No, I read the book.
What's it? The guy in there, the guy. Oh, you did. I didn't read the book.
No, I read the book. Yeah.
Smart man. The guy, Colonel, whatever his name is, the guy who's the main bad
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
He's Ralph Fiennes' brother.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, this is like two mega actors. And then I looked up the Fiennes family. There's like loads of them. They're all super successful. And then also, who was it? Louis Theroux is like Justin Theroux is his cousin.
Oh.
And the Theroux family has loads of famous makes people. Sense.
Especially in the media, if you know someone, it's like it helps you so much to get in. You know, yeah. It's like, I mean, and also they say, you know, they always say like you are who your friends are as well.
For,
like,
you are the average of your eight closest friends
exactly,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Dude.
And totally, 100%. Like if you spend your life sitting around a table discussing how you're gonna like how you're being successful, which system you're developing or whatever, that's what you're gonna be sort of. That's going to become your life, you know? So, yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, not talking down on Jack Black, like, he's mega successful. Like, massive businessman, massive, he's very clever. He's got a Nickelodeon award. And
wow. I bet he has more than that. He's great.
Oh, he does. I think he's got all sorts of stuff. Like, he was Kung Fu Panda.
Comedian.
Like,
so primarily even comedian. It's hilarious.
Tenacious D, massive, absolutely huge. There you go. Black was nominated for two Golden Globes.
Legend.
Yeah. And he was introduced
Hollywood
to the
Walk of
fame.
That's when you know you made it. Let's talk about someone else with a similar story, which I knew. I found out about this for this show. And then one I knew previously, which is one of my favorite factoids. Do you know the band The Eels?
Yes.
Oh, dude, play some Eels while we talk. Just give us a few seconds of Eels. I love The Eels.
Just want some Eels.
I love The Eels. They're like one of my favorite bands.
Eels.
See, when you search YouTube, what comes up for the Eels? What's their biggest hit? It's going to be Eels. Mr. E's Beautiful Blues, isn't it? That's nice. I need some seat. Novocaine.
Novocaine for the soul.
Oh, dude, this is so good.
We're going to play some Eels. We might get an ad.
I know. I just want to hear a few seconds of Eels.
Oh. Grammarly. Bloody Grammarly.
More than catch errors. Oh, man. I made a lot of money from Grammarly one time.
Don't fuck off, Grammarly. We like you.
They did a sponsor spot with on one of our channels. And, wait, just turn this up. This is such a tune. Oh, the Eels. After we're done recording today, I'm going to listen to a lot of Eels. No, absolutely not. Pause it. I don't want to get demonetized, but this is great. So, Eels, the guy. Open up the page.
Yeah.
Hugh Everett III.
What a name.
Is... So this guy, what's the lead singer of the Eels called? Scroll down, Children.
Children, here we go.
Because it's called E, but what's his name?
Mark
Oliver Everett, Everett. So this guy, Mark Oliver Everett, is the lead singer of the Eels, who did, I'm going to stop talking about my love of the Eels, because I'm like, oh, he did this great live album, and it's like, no one cares. This guy, on the right, scrolling on his face, He's the scientist who came up with the many worlds interpretation of quantum physics, which, if you're unfamiliar, is the idea that in a parallel universe right now, while doing this podcast, I'm also in the process of doing black tar heroin. Because
I'm not sure that's how the theory works.
Well, the theory, there's an infinite number.
Everything splits, isn't it? That there's a million different options in every
single
option.
There's an infinite number of options. So everything that is possible is happening in a parallel universe. So in some parallel universe, there is a Simon who has a heroin problem. And in this podcast, that somehow it's come around to this same moment. But the only difference is, in that universe, I'm doing heroin right now. We're already getting demonetized because we're talking about heroin. We could listen to some more Eels. Put the Eels on in the background.
I've closed the Eels.
Oh, okay,
sorry,
never mind.
Mate, sorry.
Oh, that was like, now we've ruined it. We could have at least played some Eels.
Could have enjoyed the Eels.
We could have sent some money to Mark Oliver Everett.
Does talking about heroin demonetize it?
Often, yeah. I mean, drugs in general.
God, drugs.
It's fine.
What if we say drugs are bad?
Drugs
are,
no, it's still
drugs.
Still drugs. So this guy, he came up with this theory, which is becoming much more, you know, I mean, it was always taken
acceptable,
as a serious theory.
Yeah.
And now people are seeing like, oh, this is seems to be correct.
I'll just show here. There was a picture of the, where is it? Of the quantum mechanics of it. Here we go. If we click here. Hang on.
Okay.
Just quickly.
This is going to get deep, though. This is quantum physics.
All right. Hang on. Look at that. He came up with that. Oh my God,
that is an equation.
He came up with that. Like, that's mental. Like,
he's an impressive scientist.
Imagine the Greek alphabet. Looks something like this.
Yeah, it's just all shoved into like a little box with some equal signs.
Beta and alpha and pi.
So what's extra fascinating about this dude is he didn't give a shit. Like, he lived his life and he smoked and he ate and he died at how old?
He died.
He died young.
51.
51, or relatively young. Because he was just smoking and all of this stuff. And he just believed, like, in another parallel universe, another version of me lives on, so who gives a shit? He truly believed so much in his theory that he's like, it doesn't even matter.
It's kind of...
Scroll down, see if there's... I haven't read this page in ages because I know this story, but... just go down to death. Death and Legacy.
Here we go.
So
he died of a sudden heart attack. So at the age of 51, Everett, who believed in quantum immortality.
That's it. Quantum immortality. That's the name.
Died suddenly of a heart attack at home in his bed on the night of July 18th, 1982. Everett's obesity, frequent chain smoking and alcohol drinking almost certainly contributed to this. Although he seemed healthy at the time, a committed atheist, he had asked that his remains be deposed in the trash after his death. His wife kept his ashes in an urn for years before complying with his wishes.
So yeah, there's that. I love the fact that it's just such an interesting... The guy who came up with the parallel worlds theory is the father of the lead singer of the Eels. And then E from the Eels, lots of people died in his life and he sings about it in his songs, and I think it makes his music quite so good and deeply sad. And that... is that was supposed to be cheery.
That put a downer on a cheery story, didn't it?
Do we have
you, E.
God damn it, Mark. Do we have anything else for today?
Let's have a look. Hang on. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You've got one for me.
So basically, I was looking at this and I thought this is a pretty depressing episode, so let's bring something cheerful.
I wish I had your sense of balance.
So have you ever heard or seen a circular rainbow?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, well, there you go. You put a downer on that.
Like, right. Out of plane windows.
Out of plane
windows.
I looked
at this, and I'm like, yeah, I've seen that.
You've seen that. And yeah. Do you know what they're called?
Yeah, I read the article like 2 hours ago.
It's called a glory. Which I thought is hilarious because they're round and it comes... It's a beautifully like set up joke to call it a glory hole.
Yeah.
But hey, no, it's... So this is basically...
Demonetization! let's just title this one Glory Holes.
Glory Holes. So glories are common. They're seen all the time by people traveling in aeroplanes. You can only see them at altitude. You need the sun to be directly behind your head. In front, you need to see an ordinary cloud, and as you look towards the cloud, look for the shadow of the aeroplane. The plane's shadow may be surrounded by a multicolored circle. That's the glory.
So what's causing it?
Yeah, no, I'm just coming down. If we go
sorry.
Down. No, that's all right. Sorry.
Jumping all over this. Oh, like, tell me how it's done, Sam!
Right, here we go. So... In other words, like a rainbow, a glory is centered on an anti-solar point, which coincides with your head shadow or the larger shadow of the plane, if you're looking out the aeroplane window. The point must be the opposite the sun's position in the sky. You might see that when the sun is in the sky and you're on the ground, the anti-solar point always lies below your horizon. Right, so...
So how's it done, though? What is it?
It's
got to be something to do with rainbows, right? Because it, I mean, we're looking at it now and it looks exactly like a rainbow. So it's got to be about the light refracting through the water particles.
Here we go. So yeah, exactly. A glory is made of sunlight scattered back towards you.
Okay.
It's much smaller than a rainbow and it's made by light scattered from the droplets of a cloud instead of falling raindrops.
I've seen it. I love looking out the window. Oh, that one. We're
That's
looking
beautiful.
At an image
amazing,
and it's, most of them are looking because you see the shadow of the plane because just how it lines up, and then the shadow of the plane looks to be inside like a circular rainbow. The second picture that Sam has here is of a hot air balloon.
Hot air balloon.
Have you done hot air balloons?
I've not. There's something romantic about hot air balloons. I would love to do it.
I would love to do it.
Do you know, I'd love to go to that place in Turkey. What do they call it? Kapadokya. Oh, you
look up a picture. Bring this up.
Yeah, hang on. Here we go. Turkey.
I think I will book a hot... I'd love to book. I bet you could do it.
What?
It's... Do a hot air balloon on flights.
Oh, for sure.
Not super complicated.
Hot air balloons.
I never see them here, though. I used to live in...
Yeah, this place.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of hot air balloons.
Yeah, but it's also amazing. It's like amazing landscape. So,
wow.
Look at that.
Oh, this is rad. Isn't it dangerous to have them all so close together?
Cappadocia, it's called. No.
This is also absolutely such a fake picture.
Oh, yeah. Hang
Look on. At the size Hang of
on.
The moon.
Hang on. Here we go. So that's what it looks like.
Oh, this is great.
That's amazing. Yeah, so for anyone... I guess we can only recommend that you Google this picture.
Oh, my God. It's just a beautiful vista. And then there's maybe 10 hot air balloons at different heights, all beautiful, like just before sunset or sunrise.
It's that very famous picture of Turkey where the hot air balloons are all taken off, and it's always at sunset
I've
or sunrise.
I've never seen this.
Have you? What?
No.
This is such a famous photo.
I mean, I feel like I've seen the lots of balloons everywhere, but I've never seen this photo. Who took it? Does it say?
Travel
Doesn't
and leisure.
Say. I mean, it could be one of a million photos of a similar thing.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
I mean, this is a particular location in Turkey, Cappadocia. And it's, I think it could be Cappadocia. But,
shit, I'm going to add this to my list along.
Oh, know. Definitely, for sure. But no, hot air ballooning. I think there's a romance to hot air ballooning that airplanes doesn't have. And
dude, of course, airplanes suck.
Like, the little sisters in that are pretty cool.
Yeah, no, sorry, that's fine. But I mean, like... economy travel on a jet plane.
Where
do
you go with Ryanair?
Dude, I'm flying. Oh, man. Slight tangent. I'm flying to the UK next 2 weeks of 2 weeks time. I'm flying out with Ryanair and back with EasyJet because I hate myself. And do you know how much this cost me? Because Ryanair started doing more flights between... we both live in Prague in the Czech Republic. Ryanair's must be doing more flights because now the prices are super competitive.
I think the whole there and back has cost you... £50.
£45.
Nice.
Dude.
Good job.
It's crazy.
You know, America doesn't
have this. Car rental for the weekend's like £80.
Our American friends won't understand this because they just don't have budget airlines to this level like we do.
I just did a video about this.
Yeah.
It's
mad. Like, it's in the UK, in Europe, you can fly between different countries literally for less than filling up your car. Like, it's...
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
I could... That return is less than a tank of gas.
I once bought a flight just because it was there. To from London to France, to I think it was to Bordeaux, and it was £4.99.
That's ridiculous.
£4.99. And there was one day where Ryanair released 50,000 seats for £1 each. And everyone just went and bought like 15, 20 flights, and they went, right, I'll figure out where I'm going on holiday once it comes.
I'll give a quick plug for a video I just did, which was literally about were $1 flights and £1 flights actually ever a thing?
Yep.
They were. I did a whole video about it. It's on my channel, Business Blaze. Subscribe. And that's our last story today, right?
That's our last story. I think we can get out of here.
Subscribe to this, however you do that, whether you're watching on YouTube as a clip, whether you're listening on podcast, then you probably already are subscribed. But do it again.
Wherever you get your pods, subscribe, like, comment if possible.
Yeah, leave a review is a what review. We want. Leave a review. If you're podcasting,
a high
this,
review.
Leave a review.
Preferably a high review.
None of those 2-star, 1-star nonsense. No one likes that.
Two guys talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a podcast.
They sound too British.
We can do it in a southern accent if you like.
Do all of that stuff. Say hi to me on Twitter. I'm at Simon Whistler. Sam Myers is still without Twitter.
Do you have Wi-Fi here? I'm going to set up a Twitter right now.
Do we have Wi-Fi here? We're browsing the internet right now, dude.
I'm going to set up a
this
Twitter.
This is my studio where I work. No, I don't have Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, what is that?
I don't use the internet for my work. This has been the Simon Whistler Show. I've been Simon Whistler.
I've been Sam Myers.
Damn right you have. We'll be back real soon with another episode. And thank you kindly for listening.
Bye.